This is Tuesday, the 28th of June, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming your way, British leaders appear to be in no hurry to start the departure process from the EU. VOA's Luis Ramirez is standing by in London with the latest for you. There is growing concern that the Leave vote in Great Britain was greatly focused on racism and xenophobia.
I think it's released a real threat and venom against racism because of the nature and language used by certain individuals and organizations who are arguing for Britain to exit from Europe.
Also ahead, majority Republicans on a U.S. congressional investigating panel are faulting this country's military for failing to respond to an attack on a diplomatic outpost in Benghazi in 2012. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, today has not been the easiest day of David Cameron's life. The British Prime Minister traveled to what is now hostile territory, seen by some as that, in Brussels to meet with EU leaders for the first time since the Brexit vote and face some tough questions about how and when Britain plans to start this divorce process. That's what you want to call it. One of them who's calling that is VOA's Luis Ramirez. He is in London. Luis, what did Cameron face in the headquarters of the EU today?
And it's not only me, but the EU officials calling it a divorce process, and a very messy one at that. Very, as you said, very tough day for Prime Minister Cameron. He made some pretty desperate pleas for Britain to get some special treatment, to get the best deal possible, especially on trade deals in a post-Brexit world. The answer was a resounding no way from the EU leaders, from the members of the EU Parliament, all saying that all they want is for Britain to leave and leave quickly.
So what happens now? I mean, what is next? Some European leaders have come out and spoken about it. Angela Merkel, for one, the leader of the Italian government, for another. What's being said overall?
Well, Angela Merkel is saying that if you're going to leave, you're going to lose. By electing to leave, you are choosing to give up all your privileges, and you can't have privileges without obligations. So what happens next is the EU wants Britain to quickly invoke Article 50, which would formally notify the EU that Britain intends to leave. That has not happened, will not happen, according to David Cameron, until he hands over office to his successor. While the Conservative Party, the nominations for his successor begin on Thursday, but it won't be till September 2nd when the Conservative Party has a new leader. Britain will have a new prime minister who would then carry that out. So it's still several more weeks of uncertainty, and that's exactly what the EU does not want. They say the uncertainty is hurting their economies. It's causing market turbulence. They want it to end as soon as possible and move on.
Well, what kind of power do they have to force such an occurrence?
They have absolutely no power to force an occurrence, such an occurrence, because essentially what happened here last Thursday in that referendum was an advisory vote. The British people voted to advise their government of their will, of their wish to break off, not remain in the European Union. The government has the prerogative to follow that advice or not. Now, of course, and considering it was a pretty large margin of 1 million votes, very large turnout, 72%, they would have no mandate. And so such an action would be highly unlikely. They are forced to implement it at this stage, the way things are looking.
So right now it's kind of like out of standoff, huh? So, I mean, does this whole movement have a plan of what they want to do, or do they just go vote and not have a plan backing it up?
Well, the leaders of the Leave campaign certainly had a plan and have a strategy. They are not making that plan public, at least. But the strategy, if you talk to analysts here, is to wait until the dust settled. Now, the market turbulence that we've been seeing over the last few days, including the a deep dive that the British pound took, all that was foreseen by economists in London and elsewhere. They predicted that the pound would plunge 15% in the first few hours after a Brexit vote would be announced. And so that has always been part of their plan. And they figure they cannot start implementing action to disengage from the European Union until everything is settled, until the markets are settled, and until it remains clear exactly who's going to be implementing it. And as I said, it will be the successor to David Cameron, not Cameron himself. He said he didn't support Brexit from the beginning. He should not be the one to carry it out.
VOA's chief European correspondent, Luis Ramirez, joining us live from London. Luis, thank you so much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
Talk to you soon. This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman. There have been reports of an increase in racial abuse in the United Kingdom following its landmark decision to leave the European Union. Many who voted to leave say, with locals worried about the rising number of immigrants settling in Britain and putting pressure on social services and increasing competition for jobs, that has been a contributing factor to the reports of xenophobia. But now there are fears that the leave vote has served to validate and vindicate these racist views as a growing number of people report incidents of racial harassment in the wake of the vote. We welcome to International Edition Suresh Grover, a longtime civil rights proponent in London and director of the Monitoring Group in London. That's a leading national anti-racist and civil rights organization in the UK. Suresh, thanks so much for being with us. Has the Brexit vote indeed exposed the extent of xenophobia in the UK?
Yes, we have definitely seen a rise in racial abuse and racial threats and xenophobia, not just against migrant communities from Europe settled in this country, but against black and Asian communities who've been here for decades and even half a century. I think it's released a real threat and venom against racism because of the nature and language used by certain individuals and organizations who are arguing for Britain to exit from Europe.
Is this something new that is just connected, or has the whole Brexit vote just been a trigger for all of this to become public?
Well, racial harassment has always been a problem in UK. For example, last year there were about 58,000 racial incidents, ranging from verbal abuse to threats on people to attacks on people physically, recorded by the police. But what we've seen over the debate in the last 4 weeks is a real rise in open and violent abuse by people who feel that migrants are responsible for their economic disadvantage or lack of jobs, etc. And that's been legitimized wrongly and sensationally and very alarmingly by politicians who are arguing for Britain to leave Europe.
Give us some examples for people listening around the world who have not been minutely following this story as to what some of these politicians have been saying.
One of the clearest examples was a massive advertisement campaign by the leader of United Kingdom Independence Party called Mr. Nigel Farage, which had a massive picture of Syrian and Lebanese and Middle Eastern refugees queuing up to come to Europe, and he used this very widely. It was and the message was breaking point, and the message understood by people seeing it was that there were hundreds and thousands and millions of people entering Britain via the gates of Europe, and there would be a threat to their economic stability and increase issues to do with security in this country. Now, that, in my view, resulted in increases of violence against migrants. It also led to the tragic murder of a Labour politician called Jo Cox in her constituency in north of England. And this is the first time where somebody has been killed for her political views of supporting refugees by a person when he shot her, said, "Traitor to Britain and freedom for Britain now." So you've had advertisement campaigns, and obviously it was taken down as soon as the murder took place. But this has been repeated many times. The message has been repeated many times. There's been this talk about a real Brexit represents the Independence Day for Britain. Well, Britain hasn't been invaded by an alien force or by Europe. It may be at disadvantage in terms of European financially, but that case wasn't argued. So the language that's been used of independence, of invaders, of people queuing in their millions to come to this country, and blaming migrants for economic deprivation or pressure on housing, I think released the real anger in people who themselves were suffering from austerity measures in this country.
Do you think that this xenophobic tide was the primary reason that the vote came in as it did?
I think a section of people who voted for it did it because, and a large section of people voted simply on the immigration question rather than the issue of Europe generally. So I think it's a very sad state of affairs in Britain.
Well, that's my next question. Is this just isolated in Great Britain, or is this a worldwide phenomenon, especially with the surge of migrants over recent years?
It's definitively a worldwide phenomenon because of the really the impact of war and starvation and globalization that has taken place over this period. You know, what's really important about Britain is that Britain sees itself as a beacon on race relations in terms of and tolerance in terms of Europe as a whole. I think that reputation has decisively been broken, and it's been broken and linked with the Brexit campaign. And so people are extremely fearful, anxious, and they are not sure how they're going to cope with either the fear of xenophobia or isolation from Europe.
What do you do about it? Is there an answer?
I think we have to condemn decisively acts of xenophobia and racism. We have to act very swiftly. I think politicians have a responsibility of reminding the nation that migrants are not responsible for the economic crisis. And I think there has to be support resources given to people who are supporting victims of racism in this country. And if we are living in a very fragile period and there needs to be a coming together on issues to do with human rights, on issues to do with tolerance, and on issues to do eradicating racism, and if that has to be real, genuine, and authentic, it can't just be sound bites.
Shoris Grover, a longtime civil rights proponent in London, director of the Monitoring Group in London, a leading national anti-racist and civil rights organization in the UK. We thank you so much for being with us here on The Voice of America. We welcome into the studio, as always, Andrew Palsheski, who is the guru of social media for International Edition. Well, Andrew, we just heard all about what is happening as far as the Brexit vote in the UK is concerned, worries about xenophobia, and that seems to be the overriding big story, as it was when we last spoke late last week. Where does social media stand on this now?
Well, the social media has kind of evolved as this vote and the story about the vote has evolved. So initially, right afterwards, there was the shock from the Remain campaigners that they lost. There was just elation from the Leave folks who said that their side won. And then it's evolved in the past couple days to touch on these issues like xenophobia, people saying that that was something that really drove the campaign and that it wasn't really about economics or anything. It was a fear campaign. And fascinating that we're seeing now a new hashtag emerged, RebrExit, which is regret for the Brexit. There have been a lot of people who have expressed their regret for voting to leave, and they said if they could go back, they wish they would vote for Remain. So
enough that maybe this might be a social media and other push to have some kind of revote on this thing, if possible?
Oh, we're already seeing that on social media for sure. There's a campaign that's or petition that's put up as part of this campaign 3 million signatures I saw in one petition that they want to do a revote or invalidate the results of this leave vote. So I think social media is going to continue to play a huge role in this as this evolves, and maybe as they do a revote or they, you know, whether they do that or not remains to be seen, but social media is going to be commenting on it and pushing it every step of the way. We're actually covering this on our hashtag VOA show today because it's been such a big issue. We covered Brexit last week. We're doing an update today, and you can find out information about that on voanews.com/hashtag VOA.
What else is trending today?
Well, the other trending topic here in the U.S. is Benghazi. Now, this is relating to an attack on the U.S. Consulate in Benghazi, Libya, that killed the ambassador there, Chris Stevens.
And we'll be covering this in a little more depth in just a few
and
minutes.
You'll go, you'll go into the details, so I won't repeat those, but this is a report that's been released by the U.S. House of Representatives talking about the attack, who's to blame. It's inherently a U.S. political issue because the report focuses on Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State at the time that the attack happened. Now, this is something that she's been following and kind of dogged her throughout her presidential campaign and really throughout her time as Secretary of State. A lot of her political enemies have tried to use this against her. They're contending that this is a major issue. It was a terrorist attack. So a lot of back and forth on that.
As always, Andrew Palshevsky talking social media here on International Edition. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
You can follow Andrew on Twitter at Apal, at APAL. We also invite you to follow International Edition, the stream at VOA underscore IE, and on Facebook, VOA Now website, VOA News at voanews.com.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Among our top stories, majority Republicans on a U.S. congressional investigating panel are faulting the country's military for failing to respond to a diplomatic outpost in Benghazi, Libya, to prevent a 2012 terrorist attack that killed four Americans. The panel's chairman, Congressman Trey Gowdy, said Tuesday no U.S. military assets were ever deployed to Benghazi, despite the orders of President Barack Obama and then Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta. We move along now, and this is VOA's International Edition. Traveling to a strange city can be a challenging task, but in a hotel in New York City is using the latest digital technology to help its guests navigate the Big Apple. As International Edition's David Byrd reports, the hotel uses the latest information from the Time Out Travel Group to help guests have a truly interactive experience.
Step into the lobby of the Renaissance Hotel in Midtown Manhattan, and you might notice two bright blue footprints on the floor. Step onto those footprints, and several large circles appear on the floor with 10-minute walk, 20-minute walk, 30-minute walk, and other titles in them. Pick one of the circles, and attractions, restaurants, and things to do within that distance pop up on a screen in front of you. See something you like? Well, you can learn more by just pointing at it. David DeFalco is the hotel's general manager.
So you step into the two footsteps that are actually on the ground to give you some direction on that. And the first thing you'll notice is six buckets will appear on the ground. And those buckets have different parameters around them. So, for example, one of the buckets will say 10-minute walk, and another bucket will say morning. So if you step into the 10-minute walk bucket, you will have nine pieces of content that will display on the screen in front of you that give you nine different attractions to be able to go to that are within a 10-minute walk of the property.
Falco says that pointing at an attraction you see causes a tile to blow up on the screen in front of you, and you can get very detailed information about that attraction, like prices, hours, menus for restaurants, and other information. The content comes from the Time Out New York portal, part of the worldwide Time Out Travel Network. David DeFalco says the information is refreshed daily from Time Out, so what you see is the latest information.
The partnership with Time Out is that our server every morning pulls content from their server at 4 a.m. and refreshes all of the items up on the Discovery portal to ensure that they're still relevant and that we have the newest and greatest attractions that fall into the buckets on the ground.
The digital elements are designed to appeal to young people, something that Jessica Rodriguez of the Wagstaff Worldwide Marketing Company says is vital for the travel and tourism business.
I don't think the traditional hotel experience has gotten stale necessarily, but I do think that we do that there is a need for wow factors as part of a differentiator for a brand narrative story or to get people to book into your hotel.
David DeFalco says that his hotel sits at a crossroads and aims to meet the needs of all its guests.
Renaissance is really starting to move down the road of really catering to the millennial traveler. We're at a very unique time right now in the travel industry. We have three full generations traveling with us. We have baby boomers, we have Gen X, we have Gen Y. It's a very unique situation to be in as a hotelier as we're trying to cater to all of those needs as we go forward.
The Renaissance Hotel in Midtown Manhattan opened in March of this year in the Garment District neighborhood across from Penn Station and Madison Square Garden. All the digital elements are located on the ground floor. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And that wraps up our program for this Tuesday. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. Our director, Patrice Martin. I'm Ira Melman. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States extends its sympathy to the people of Pakistan as they mourn the senseless murder of famed Sufi Qawwali singer Amjad Sabri. Mr. Sabri, who came from a distinguished family of singers of Sufi devotional music, was gunned down in his car in the southern city of Karachi on June 22nd by unidentified assailants on motorbikes. Karachi police described the attack as an act of terror. A faction of the Pakistani Taliban has claimed responsibility for the murder. The traditions of Sufi Muslims date back approximately 1,000 years in South Asia. But in recent times, they have drawn the anger of hardline Islamist groups like the Taliban. The State Department's most recent report on international religious freedom cites numerous reports of attacks on holy places, cemeteries, and symbols of religious minorities in Pakistan, and mentions the February 2014 attack on the shrine of Mast Qawqali, a popular Sufi poet of Baluchistan. The report also notes that throughout the year, members of religious minorities were targeted and killed by violent extremists. Thousands of Pakistanis attended Mr. Sabri's funeral. Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif called Mr. Sabri's death an irreparable loss. At a press briefing, State Department spokesperson John Kirby said such acts as the murder of Amjad Sabri violate the fundamental freedoms of expression and religion and belief. The arts, Mr. Kirby added, have long been a forum for new ideas for fighting against intolerance. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Mr. Sabri's family and to the people of Pakistan.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.